Thanks for listening to us on the Jefferson Exchange today. We're always glad when you join us here. And if you'd like to take part in our conversations, feel free. Phone numbers here on the Exchange, 800-838-3760. Anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. More than 35,000 people commit suicide every year in the United States, and while the number itself is tragic, the pain only ends in death for the person committing suicide. It continues or begins for the people who care about that person. Tomorrow, November 23rd, is International Survivors of Suicide Day, a chance to recognize and remember the people left behind by the people who choose suicide. We have two guests in the studio with me here. Julia Lockhart is the Executive Director of Winter Spring. Julie, welcome.
Thank you so much.
It's good to have you here. Shoshana Alexander is with us as well. She lost a sister to suicide and has participated in programs, both as group member and as leader of group at Winter Spring as well. Shoshana, good to see you again.
Thanks, Jeff.
So let's talk about the basic stuff first, and we're not talking about Suicide Awareness Month. Apparently, that's a whole different month. This is about suicide survivors getting their own day. And what's the day all about, Julie?
Well, the day is national and international. It's in 300 cities on six continents, and it's sponsored by the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and so they've designated this day. In fact, in 1999, Senator Harry Reid, a survivor of his father's suicide, introduced a new resolution to the United States Senate, and so with its passing, this became the official day to recognize for people who are left behind, those that we call survivors. So a survivor in this context means that they have lost someone they love to suicide.
Is there a particular significance to the date or where it's placed on the calendar or anything like that?
I don't really know that there's a particular significance. For me, I think it's interesting that it's right before the holiday season, because the holidays can be particularly difficult for people who've lost loved ones regardless, and to have it kind of as a day of remembrance and a day of healing right before the holidays may, in fact, be there to help people move through. And I hope that that's what we focus on tomorrow in our own discussions, just helping people move through the holiday season with this grief.
I jumped right in and introduced you as the Executive Director of Winter Spring. Without explaining what Winter Spring is, would you help folks out if they haven't heard of it before?
Sure. Winter Spring helps children, teens, mm-hmm. and adults who have experienced the pain of loss to embrace life again. That's our mission. And so we have bereavement support in our organization, which includes phone support for people who call in, as well as resources and group support. And one of the kinds of groups that we do is suicide loss. We also do programs for children and teens, not specific to suicide, but there's plenty of kids in our valley who have experienced a loved one dying by suicide. So those programs are helpful to them as well.
When we were talking about the numbers just before we came on, Shoshana, I had mentioned to you that I was just checking figures. What I had seen was that it's at least 35,000 people. In fact, I think for 2010, the figure was actually north of 38,000 people committing suicide across the country, which leads to a presumption that at least 38,000 people are missing that person. It's a bigger ripple effect than that, though.
Right. It's estimated that about at least six people are profoundly affected. It's a very different kind of experience of death than when someone loses someone through natural causes, through illness, even through accidents.
What are, then, the dimensions of loss that are felt by suicide survivors, not necessarily felt by people who lose loved ones unexpectedly through other ways?
Well, all loss by death it can be very difficult. But for the person who has lost someone to suicide, it's called complex grief. What has happened is someone has been murdered, essentially. But the very person who was the murderer is a loved one, someone we have cared about. So we end up, there's no, who to blame? Who do you blame? We blame ourselves, thinking there should have been something we could have done. Should we have been able to stop it? On the other hand, if the road down was really difficult and chaotic, then we might feel relieved and feel like we shouldn't. Our lives just get ripped apart. It's like having the rug pulled out. Sorrow, deep sorrow that they felt that deeply, the need to escape from life with nothing that could be done. Anger. We can feel anger. Anger at feeling abandoned, helpless. There's nothing we can do. They got the last word. We might, right? What can we say? What can we do? It can also lead to crisis of faith, questions about, you know, people say they're in a better place, but then that meant that our place wasn't good enough. And then one other thing that's very different is when you lose someone naturally, people rush in to say, I'm so sorry, or to comfort you, or to bring over food. Suicide, until very recently, was a crime. Ironically enough, punishable by death. And
really, you could get the death penalty for trying to commit suicide?
Yes. Yes. In places like, England, 1961, the law was still in the books.
Wow.
And I don't know, in the United States. And in most religions, suicide is a sin, a grievous sin. And so our society still has that shadow over it, and people are afraid. People don't know how to handle that.
We're talking about International Survivors of Suicide Day, which is tomorrow, and its observances around the region. We'll talk in just a few moments about an observance in Medford that Julie and Shoshana are connected to. Julie Lockhart from Winter Spring. Shoshana Alexander lost a sister to suicide, participates in programs at Winter Spring. You can join us on The Exchange. The questions might not be easy or the answers terribly easy either, but we are here for you. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552. 6782. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Julie Lockhart, I found myself thinking about the stages of grief that I think we all are sort of aware of peripherally, whether we felt them or not ourselves. But the one I circled here is acceptance. Is that the hardest one for the survivors of suicide?
I would imagine that's the hardest one for survivors. It can be hard for anyone. In terms of the stages of grief, that work, I think, is really valuable. It's not a linear process. So sometimes acceptance may happen on, a particular moment or an hour, and then they're back into denial or, deep sadness or whatever. So I think it's important to realize that we're going to feel a wide range of emotions. And certainly with suicide, more than perhaps any other loss, that feeling of acceptance is going to take a lot longer if it ever happens at all.
Simply because, is it because there's this layer of stuff? There's the anger, certainly, but is there some guilt here, too? Guilt at not being able to stop the person from committing suicide?
Yeah, all the kind of just a blender full of difficult emotions are associated with suicide especially. And so guilt is certainly one of them. What if, and why didn't I, and what could I have done differently? All those kinds of things are going to go through that person's mind for a long time.
Shoshana, I noticed you nodding when we were talking about guilt.
Yes, right. That's always it. You wake up at night, you carry it through the day. I should have done something different, or at that point when she called, or always that question. We're like prosecutors asking ourselves, what did we do wrong? I also want to add on, because that was a really good question about acceptance. The acceptance almost requires one to say, this was okay, or maybe this was the only way it could have been, or maybe people even have a right to do this. And this is a perennial question. The oldest suicide note is 4,000 years old in Egypt. People have been doing this forever, and it is one of the most mysterious human experiences of all, to understand how life could turn against itself. But acceptance is the critical piece to say, it's okay for me to live. My life can go on.
When you used the word murder a few minutes ago, it really did bring it in a new context, because the fact is that you're not just grieving a person who was lost to a disease or to old age or a combination thereof or a car accident even, where you at least be mad at the person in the other car. You're talking about an act of violence committed against a loved one by that same loved one.
Yes.
Julie?
Yeah, definitely. And so I think that's part of the tragic nature of suicide, especially people who have found their loved one, or, of course, when the police come and knock on the door and describe the situation, there's very much a visual that goes with the death that makes it also so difficult to work through.
And does anybody feel it more acutely than anybody else? Friends, family, spouses, parents, children?
Well, with any kind of loss, it depends on the closeness of the relationship as to how much they feel. And so the closer the relationship, the more they're going to struggle with it. So I have a cousin who suicided, and we were not close. Granted, my family didn't ever talk about it, but for me, that wasn't such a difficult one, although I do have a visual in my head about, him using a gun on himself and what that must have looked like.
Is there a real let's not talk about this thing? I mean, more so than with people who died of natural causes, or at least not self-inflicted causes?
Absolutely. And I do think it's getting better, but there is a stigma in our society, and people don't talk about it. So my mother's father suicided before I was born, so I never knew my grandfather, but we never talked about it in the family. In fact, I didn't know it was suicide until I was an adult, and she's not the one that told me. So there was definitely a silencing in my family that, you know, I think had a ramification on how we grew up and you know, the fact that we just didn't ever know the truth.
Shoshana here again, the advantage of interviews in person. I can see you nodding while Julie's answering to that particular one.
At first, after my sister's suicide, I talked to people and Auntie noticed how afraid they were. They just couldn't take this in. And so after a while, I stopped. And when I moved to Ashland 14 years ago, all the new people I met for years didn't know I had even ever had a sister because I didn't mention it.
Really?
Right, because what? I had a sister. She's dead. How? Right?
Oh, right, and, sure. It gets onto like, well, she died young then, didn't she? Yeah, so then you have to explain.
Right.
Right, interesting. We're talking to Shoshana Alexander and Julie Lockhart about International Survivors of Suicide Day here on the Jefferson Exchange. We'll talk about the events coming up in just a few moments. Join us on the Exchange if you have thoughts, comments, questions. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So what are the events of International Survivors of Suicide Day, particularly in the Rogue Valley?
So tomorrow what happens is we're meeting at the Smullen Center at 10 o'clock. The Smullen Center is off Barnett Road, Rogue Valley Medical Center. I know it's called something else.
Asante now, Rogue Regional Medical Center. We've finally gotten used to saying that.
I haven't gotten used to it yet, but it's really easy to find. It's right off exit 27. You know, you take a right, and it's about three stoplights down on the left. So we'll meet at 10, and it goes until 1. And what happens is the National Office has sent of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention has sent us a video. So we start with the video. We'll take a break. There's food and drinks. And then when we come back, we'll have a local panel. Shoshana is one of five people locally talking about their experiences with suicide. And what we hope is that these folks can share some of the things that have helped them get through the experience of suicide and move on with their lives. And then we'll have a sharing experience as well, so people can ask questions, they can share their own stories. It's a very warm, welcoming kind of event. People can bring photos of their loved ones. We'll have a table for that, and we will have a closing circle as well. So I've been to two so far. They've both been very, I think, healing and interesting for me, too, having suicide in my family, even though I wasn't directly affected in the way some of these people like Shoshana were affected.
So, Shoshana, what kind of support does a survivor need? What were the things that helped you as you were trying to cope with your sister's suicide?
Well, just to follow up to what Julie was saying, to be in one room with other people who understand the rawness of that experience is comforting and really healing. You know you are not the only one. The things that really helped were I launched quickly into raising a child after my sister's suicide and really threw myself into that. So it was over 20 years before I went to a support group at Winter Spring. And what I noticed was by being in that place, first of all, I saw that how raw those people were who had recently lost. I was like, oh, that validates what I felt all those years ago. And it was the first time that I stopped waking up in the morning thinking about my sister first thing. It was the first time I stopped thinking about her at least once an hour for all those years.
20 years then.
Right. So a support group is really important. That was profoundly healing for me. I also ended up working on I'm a developmental editor, working on a book called Unfinished Conversation about suicide. And I worked through it as well, which was extremely helpful. It puts you right into it. Remembering it and facing it is one of the best things to do in supportive contexts.
But something about what you just said, though, I mean, does it help to actually have conversations with the person or to write letters to them or to do something to express your feelings directly to the person you're missing?
What's interesting about this book, Unfinished Conversation by Robert LeSwan and Marilyn Schoffel, is that it's a guided journal. And it asks you questions directly, like, how did your loved one die? Who did you first contact when you heard about that? What was their bedroom like? All kinds of, so that you can walk through it. Because that's what we have to do. We get over it by going through it.
Not by running away from it.
Not by running away from it. And really, we may never get over it. But we can take our lives again and live them.
The value of any support group then, Julie, would appear to be this real sense of uplift you get from realizing, oh, it's not just me.
Right. That is the best thing. And that's true with children, teens, and adults, to be in a room of other people who have experienced a similar loss or grief in any context, but especially with suicide survivors, to have other people in the room and to hear the stories really does tend to be uplifting, because they do find out that they are normal. Because there's so often with grief, especially this kind of grief, that they feel like they're crazy. And the things that are going on in their heads and the way they're behaving and they're not getting stuff done and all those kinds of things that happen with grief. It's really nice to be in the room with other people and find out you're just normal.
The process, though, of waiting to deal with it, though, it's my own personal belief that the longer you wait to deal with something, the more you're going to have to deal with it. It's sort of like stashing money into the bank years ago when there still were good interest rates, you know, where there's just much more if you wait and sit on it. Is that fair?
I think that's fair. Yeah. There's so many of us in society who don't know how to work through and move. The word move through, I think, is really important. Move through our grief. It's much easier to run and just get on with life. And lots of people do that. But sometimes there's an event in their lives that kind of knocks them, you know, across. I always think of it as the 2x4 that just kind of gets you. And then a lot of times people end up dealing with all of the grief. And so we do hear that a lot with people in Winter Spring.
We'll take a couple more minutes here talking to Julia Lockhart and Shoshana Alexander about International Survivors of Suicide Day tomorrow. We're talking about it here and now on the Jefferson Exchange. You can join 800-838-3760, 541-552-6782. Email jx@jeffnet.org. And Shoshana, you had a point to bring up?
I'd like to add that until recently there weren't suicide survivor support groups.
That here again, because we just weren't dealing with it as a society?
I had never heard of that. And in fact, the National Suicide Prevention Association, I think, started in the late 70s. But it has been so in the dark that all of these things, like the Walk Out of Darkness, which I think is 5 years old, these things are just recent of acknowledging that suicide exists and is this rampant. In Oregon, the rate doubled in 1 year. Globally, in 50 years, the rate of suicide went up 60%. Something big is happening here, and acknowledging it is really important. So Winter Spring support groups are extremely important.
I noticed that nationally as well. Dredged up a New York Times article indicating, particularly among middle-aged Americans, the suicide rate is really on the climb.
And young people, 15 to 24, that's the highest rate in Oregon, at least.
Shoshana, did you lose friends because of your sister's suicide? People who just, they figured since that's what you were going with and they didn't want to talk about it, they just didn't talk to you?
Nope, I had to temper what I said and talked about. I had to pretend like I wasn't experiencing what I was experiencing.
So you squelched it for a long time, mm-hmm. And so your friends stayed around anyway. What was the experience like to finally get some of that weight lifted off of you through the program you attended, and then to be able to turn around and help other people by leading a similar group? What was that like?
That was really, really powerful. I felt by the time I did it, by the time I led a group, and I wouldn't have done it otherwise, I felt very solid. Like I could sit there and hold that tremendous grief that comes up.
There are no hard and fast rules. I know everybody grieves in their own way. So, Julia Lockhart, are there any good baseline things that people who are survivors of suicide need to know, just right off the bat, the things that they should be thinking about, dealing with, methods of coping?
If they can find safe places to share their experience, I think that's probably the most valuable thing they can do for themselves, to to be able to find people that will listen. And not everybody is capable of that. So as Shoshana talked about, somebody who can hold your grief, because there is such big grief. So finding those kind of safe places is really important to share, and talking through it. And for people sitting with someone who have just experienced a suicide loss, understanding that they are going to have very shocking emotions, and just to be there and hold that experience and hold space for them.
Meaning what? Hold space and hold that for them?
Just not try and advise them, really being with them present from the heart rather than in the head, not trying to fix it. You can't fix it. But understanding that what they're going through is normal, and sitting with them and asking them questions. I recently met with someone who was in a winter spring program in 1994, so we've been doing it for a while, who lost her daughter to suicide. And one of the things that I really was astounded about and really appreciated was that she wanted me to show her daughter's picture. So she showed me her picture, and she told me the story. She told me how she suicided. So she wanted to share all of those details. And my role, even 20 years later, just like if I were sitting with her immediately afterward, is just to sit and listen and to hear what she has to tell me.
The listen part's the big one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because it seems like the what everybody wants to do is say the right thing or provide some comfort. You really can't do that in a lot of cases, can you?
There really is no right thing to say, except perhaps, I can't imagine what you're going through.
Also, it's really important for people not to expect someone to get over it. Okay, it's been 6 months, it's been 2 years. Shouldn't you be over this by now? It's a long, long process to get through this kind of grief.
And the clock is not the same for all people. I mean, and some people might be a lot better in 6, 9, 12 months, and some people might take that many years to rebound anyway. And again, I think that you pointed this out already, Shoshana, it's not a matter of getting over it, it's a matter of getting through it.
Yes. Yes. And also framing it in a way that makes sense to your own self. And honoring that person for the fact that they lived, not by defining them entirely by the way they died.
And so, International Survivors of Suicide Day, about how many people do you expect at the Smullen Center tomorrow?
I'm hoping 40 to 60 plus the volunteers that are showing, and it would be great if we had 100. We've got plenty of room for that.
Okay, and that starts at 10:30 at the Smullen Center at
Asante. 10 o'clock.
10 o'clock. 10 o'clock,
yes.
Okay. 10 o'clock at Asante Rogue Regional Medical Center, the Smullen Center on Barnett Road in Medford. As you heard, you can take the freeway exit 27 to get there. Julia Lockhart and Shoshana Alexander, thank you so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.
Short break in the exchange, and then back with Garrison Keillor.